Good afternoon, and thank you for coming along to listen to this presentation today. And I want to thank the other speakers. I've really very much enjoyed listening to all the presentations. My name is Jeanette Baird, and I'm from Rhode Island. I am on the faculty at the One Albert School of Medicine, where I'm a research and psychologist there and conduct most of my research in the emergency departments in Rhode Island. So my talk today will be about the results of a randomised trial conducted in Rhode Island that was designed to determine the efficacy of a brief intervention to increase testing for STIs, particularly chlamydia and gonorrhea, among young female emergency department patients. Here are my co-investigators and other research staff, and I want to thank the Rhode Island Foundation for funding for this study, and supplemental funding was also given from NIDA. And I have no relationships to disclose. So the purpose of today's presentation is to tell you about our study, why we decided to do it in the emergency department, and why we think a brief intervention is helpful if we want to increase testing among women for chlamydia and gonorrhea, and also indeed other STIs. So to look at the problem, in the United States, chlamydia and gonorrhea are two of the most common sexually transmitted infections among young women. And of particular concern is for women, these infections can often be asymptomatic. And being asymptomatic prevents the proper treatment and diagnosis of these conditions. And untreated chlamydia and gonorrhea can lead to pelvic inflammatory disease, infertility, stillbirths. And there's also evidence that being positive for these infections increases the likelihood of also being positive for HIV. Currently, the CDC recommends that annually all women under the age of 26 be screened for chlamydia and women who are at risk should be screened for gonorrhea. And chlamydia and gonorrhea are the two most common occurring co-infections, so it makes perfect sense if you're being screened for one that you'd be screened for the other. However, screening is not universal, and the CDC estimates that less than half of those women who should be screened actually are screened. And resistance to screening comes from lack of access to healthcare, lack of knowledge about individual risk factors that you may face for these infections, and as well as the social stigma associated with having these infections. And what's particularly worrying is that certain groups are more at risk for these infections. Young black women and young Hispanic women have over twice the likelihood of contracting these infections as similar aged white women. Now, as you know as well as I do, the emergency department is an often visited place and becomes the access of resource for healthcare for many people in the United States. There are over 120 million visits to emergency departments in the ED. And people who live are below the poverty level and the underinsured are very likely to visit the emergency departments for acute and routine medical care. It's also an important place for a health venue, not just for the presenting problems, but for screening for issues such as chlamydia and gonorrhea. We also know that alcohol and other substance use problems have been shown to be more common amongst the emergency department patient population compared to patients who visit other healthcare venues. And we also know that alcohol and substance misuse are two important facilitators for the increased risk of STI by increasing the risk of unprotected sex. We conducted this study, as I said, in Rhode Island. And although Rhode Island is the smallest state, I think, in the nation, with a population of just over a million, it has the highest rate of chlamydia and gonorrhea infections of all the New England states. So given all that I've said, we conducted this research in two emergency departments in Rhode Island. The first was the emergency department of the Rhode Island Hospital, which is a level one trauma centre and sees over 100,000 patients a year. And a not much known fact about it is actually the busiest emergency department in New England and the fourth busiest emergency department in the United States, little old Rhode Island. And we also conducted the second study at the emergency department of a community hospital, the Miriam Hospital, which sees over 50,000 patients a year. So we conducted the study between June and August 2010, And we had research assistants who reviewed medical charts of patients in the ED for potential eligibility. And these were bilingual. Both of our research assistants were bilingual because we were wanting to offer this intervention and this whole protocol to women who spoke both Spanish and English. So potential eligible patients from the emergent department were female, between the ages of 18 to 35, English or Spanish speaking, not prison inmates or under home confinement, not intoxicated or otherwise unable to give consent to participate in the study, and not presenting to the ED for treatment for an STI. So the research assistants approached the potentially eligible women, explained the purpose of the study, and asked permission to ask a basic screening question. So the basic screening question was, have you ever had sex with a man? That was the entry into the study, providing all the other eligible characteristics were there. The data that was collected was anonymous for this part of the study. So we used a tablet PC, and participants completed a self-administered assessment about their recent sexual partners, their history of sexually transmitted infection, their self-perceived risk for having chlamydia or gonorrhea infection, attitudes about and their usage of condoms. We asked participants also about their substance use and the use of alcohol using the ASSIST version 3, which is a World Health Organization screening tool. And participants could hear the questions through earphone as well as read along with the question. And the full study protocol was offered in English and Spanish. At this point in the study, we did not mention the free test for chlamydia and gonorrhea, as the whole point was to see if a brief intervention would actually increase the uptake of testing acceptance. Once they completed the assessments, participants were randomised to either receive a brief intervention or not a brief intervention. The brief intervention, which was approximately 15 to 30 minutes in length, was based on the principles of motivational interviewing and the health belief model. And the purpose of this intervention was to increase participants' self-perceived potential risk for chlamydia and gonorrhea infections through education and reflective listening, and explore with the participant how their alcohol and other substance use may be associated with sexual risk-taking. And this part of the study, no incentives were offered to the women to participate in the study. After they had completed the assessment-only condition, or the assessment plus the BI, the women were asked if they would like to undergo a free urine screening test for chlamydia and gonorrhea. Women gave written consent to be tested, and personal data was collected at this point so we could inform those who were positive of their test results. In the written consent, it was explained that under Rhode Island law, all positive test results had to be sent to the State Department of Health, who would contact the women to assist in tracing their sexual partners to ensure partner treatment for the infection. No women declined testing when this was explained to them. The women were informed that Dr. Merchant, one of the physicians involved in the study, would contact them for any positive test results, and that I would contact them if their results were negative. This was the test that we used, the Aptima Combo 2 test, which is a urine test that was then processed by the microbiology lab at Rhode Island Hospital. After testing, or even if the women refused testing, all women were given information about local services for HIV testing, because we weren't offering HIV testing, and they're also given information for local resources for substance abuse support services. So, let's look at who was in our study. So we screened over 400 charts. We identified women who were potentially eligible, and we got to speaking to 261 of those. Of those who were eligible, we found 245 who said they had sex. We had 173, or 70% of women who were approached who were eligible, who agreed to participate in our study. And these were our women. So their average age was 26. Over a third of the women who participated described themselves as Hispanic. and 12% completed the full study protocol in Spanish. 10% of the women identified themselves as being black, and nearly 50% had completed high school, or at least some college education. So when we asked them about their substance use, similar to other studies that we've conducted in this ED with this population, the most common substance reported being used in the last 3 months was alcohol and marijuana. Using the ASSIST, we can compile what's called a substance severity index and look at who needs to have an intervention based on what they're telling us about the frequency of use of substance and the problems that the substances are causing for them. So what we found was that in this sample, marijuana, alcohol and opioids were identified most often as the substances that these women needed some level of intervention for. We also asked the women about their recent sexual partners in the last 3 months. For the women, we defined main partners as those they had sex with and felt committed to, casual as men they had sex with but did not feel committed to, and exchange partners as men they had sex with for exchange for money, drugs or other things. Participants could select having one or more than one type of sexual partner. So as you can see from this slide, most women reported having a main partner only, and that the use of condoms increased when women reported having sex with more than just a main partner. 43% of women had told us they'd previously had a sexually transmitted infection, and the most common STI that they'd previously had was chlamydia. When offered the free urine test, 50% of the women agreed to be testing, and I'll tell you in the next slide how that breaks down to our two groups. The most common reason for testing was that the test was free. We asked them to select from a number of options. And the most common reason for not testing was having been recently tested. And let me tell you why I've asterisked that. Because it became more and more obvious that this was actually a problematic issue. When we further probed this, given the CDC's recommendation that women should have annual testing for chlamydia, sexually active women under 26, and we asked the women when they had been tested and who tested them and what the test results were, what we found is a lot of women assumed they had been tested if they had recently visited a doctor, particularly an OBGYN doctor, without having been able to say, I've had the results of the test, or the doctor told me that I had those tests. So we found that a lot of women were assuming they had been tested when in fact they might not have been tested. To find out more about who was accepting to offer testing, we conducted a statistical analysis of the data using a multinomial logistical regression with acceptance of testing as the outcome variable. We found that significantly more women in the BI group agreed to testing, more Hispanic women agreed to testing, but having a high substance use score as measured by the ASSIST or previously having an STI did not increase the likelihood of accepting testing. We also found that more women in the BI group compared to the assessment-only group were likely to say that they could be at risk from having been exposed to an STI, and that this was independent of the type of sexual partner reported. We found 4 women who were asymptomatic who tested positive for a chlamydia infection. One of those was pregnant at the time. All of these women were contacted and linked into the appropriate medical care. So, in conclusion, we're excited that the BI increased the acceptance of testing and that women in a high-risk group, that's Hispanic women in particular, were also more likely to accept testing. The results of this study show that women who should be tested for STIs will accept testing when offered and that a BI can assist in this. It is concerning that many women may not accept the offer of an STI testing because they assume that they have previously been tested when they in fact may not have been. Thank you very much.